With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly Movie Club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
The sleigh bells are ringing! Ching, 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 ching! It's the best time of the year!
Guys, I don't know what you're doing. It's still November.
Yeah, this feels weird. Feels weird to start doing Christmas podcasts this early.
It's lovely weather for a Netflixmas podcast with you.
But look, it is the most wonderful time of the year. It is Netflixmas 2020 this year, split into 2 episodes because we'll be damned if we're going to watch 10 Christmas movies in 2 weeks.
No, it's more we'll be damned if we try to talk about 10 Netflix Christmas movies in 1 episode.
What's up, Richard?
I do have to break something to you guys.
Oh my God.
There's 11.
What happened?
There's a movie I've just found out about called Christmas Crossfire.
It sounds awesome.
Will be next week. It's here's the description of it. If you wish Christmas movies were more like Die Hard instead of Love Actually, this might be the Netflix release for you. This German action comedy is about a regular man en route with his new lover to her hometown for Christmas who stumbles upon an attempted murder and ends up in the crosshairs of the crime when the killer's target escapes with him.
If I know anything about Germans, if they call it a German action comedy, it's just going to be a German action awkward movie.
Like, really?
It's not going to be... German comedy is not. Let's just be
the Germans aren't known for their comedy.
Not so much.
They are known for their Christmases though.
But I guess there'll be 6 next week.
Do we really think that Dolly Parton's Christmas concert is a movie?
Take no exceptions if it comes out on Netflix at Christmas time. We did Klaus last year, which is like a timeless masterpiece alongside Holiday fucking Party or whatever
called. I think the Dolly Parton Christmas one you're talking about, it's not like a concert, it's like a variety show kind of thing. It's a special,
like a Very Murray Christmas, remember that?
No.
But let's talk about these before we get ahead of ourselves like we are now. Let's just talk about the 10 films, and then we're covering 5 of them today, and the 11 films, we're doing 5 of them today, and then we'll do the other 6 in 2 weeks time.
But before we do that, if our Instagram notifications are anything to go by, I think a lot of people discover the podcast through our Netflixmas episodes. So if this is your first episode of Cult Popture, hi, I'm AJ.
Oh, I'm Richard.
And I'm Jeremy. I'm not always here. I just come for terrible, tacky, cheesy movies to bitch and also enjoy.
Mm. Because every year since 2017, which we actually didn't cover, we didn't start covering them until 2018, Netflix started commissioning Christmas movies.
Basically, they came for Hallmark's gig.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And they didn't... It's not a brand, and it's not correlated anywhere.
It's not a franchise. It's not a franchise.
There are franchises contained within it, though.
Yes. Yeah. And they do this every year, and they're mostly very
bad.
Yeah, well, they're movies that I don't like, with the exceptions such as Klaus or Let It Snow last year, which I really liked as well.
But they try and hit demographics all over. They release like
correct. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they used to release 4, then they released 6, and now they're apparently releasing 11.
Plus, there's a bunch of TV shows this year as well, but we are not touching those.
Yeah, yeah. So they're really just trying to hit like every demographic with like, here's something for you to watch this Christmas. Yeah. And we try to become every demographic because we watch every one of them for some reason.
A Christmas TV show feels so fleeting to me. When are you going to... You got what? Christmas season to watch an entire TV show?
Yeah.
Bad idea.
I know, you got Christmas season to watch 11 fucking movies.
Yeah, well, I don't have time to watch the TV shows.
But okay, so here are the 10 movies. So this is just in release order. You've got Holidate, then Operation Christmas Drop, Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey, The Princess Switch, Switched Again, a sequel to 2018's The Princess Switch, Alien Xmas, which is a short film, 45 minutes long. Those are the five we're going to be covering today, but just for context, here's next time six. Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, The Christmas Chronicles Part 2, Dance Dreams, Hot Chocolate Nutcracker, Angela's...
What? Are those two different films or one film?
That's one film, Dance Dreams, semicolon, Hot Chocolate Nutcracker. It's a documentary about a performance of the Nutcracker.
I was just hoping it was some kind of like step up knockoff with like a Channing Tatum knockoff.
No, it's it follows the lead up to renowned choreographer slash dancer Debbie Allen and her troupe of young dancers' annual production of the Hot Chocolate Nutcracker. Then there's Angela's
Christmas documentary.
Yeah. It's just called The Hot Chocolate Nutcracker.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Richard.
Angela's Christmas Wish, which is another animated short like Alien Xmas, Just Another Christmas, and Christmas Crossfire, which we just discovered existed.
All right.
I actually need you to, every time we say Christmas Crossfire, I need you to pronounce it Christmas Crossfire.
So last year, we talked about these films in order of what we thought was worst to best.
Yeah, do we want to try that again?
Well, it's not as clear cut this year. Last year there was
an absolute
fuck this
best
and a hell yeah, like you
yeah,
know.
So you've mentioned it a couple of times, but last year, in amongst the I cannot remember any other films. There's the night before
Christmas.
That was a good one.
We had the third Christmas Prince movie
as
well.
That's right.
In amongst the those, we were given Let It Snow, which was a reasonly nice like Love Actually style kind of.
It was more. I would say it's more like
lines.
A John Hughes kind of style.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like a converging storylines movie. I mean, set at Christmas time.
Yeah, true.
But it was a very kind of like it was around the Zoomer generation. And we were like, fuck, all right, this might actually have a good one this year. But we were also treated to Klaus, which is an animated film. If you haven't seen it, pause this podcast. What are you doing with your life? Go watch Klaus. It is the greatest Christmas film ever made.
Make a mug of hot cocoa.
Is that a quote from Klaus? I only saw it once.
No, I'm just saying, make yourself a mug of hot cocoa and watch Klaus.
That was an imperative for the listener.
That's right. That's right.
I understand.
So I don't know. Do we want to try? Because that was one of the fun things last year was going like, all right, and now time to talk about the worst one.
I actually haven't made up my mind for what 2020's worst
one. I definitely have a worst
one. Okay,
should
we start
with
the
one
that
I struggled the most to get through?
Yeah.
I do have one of them.
I think it's the same one for all of us. So let's start with the worst film of this first half, which is
Operation Christmas Drop. Yeah.
It is Operation Christmas Drop.
It's so bad.
So Operation Christmas Drop, I would love to tell you guys what it's about and remind the audience. I found it's about it's like about bureaucracy.
Yeah, okay.
And so I found it very boring and therefore cannot remember what it's about.
Okay, the worst part about this is that it's actually about something real because it's essentially military propaganda.
Yeah, so I saw an article.
So at the end, you find out that this is about a very real thing, which is essentially Operation Christmas Drop, which is this this atoll or like this group of islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And the Americans have had an army base on there since the Second World War. And so they basically, it's kind of a strategic place for the US military to kind of like keep control over a certain amount of the Pacific Islands.
They don't
islands.
Go into this into the movie.
No, not at all. Like, you know, it's like, how do we make sure that we can, they call it a non-floating aircraft carrier.
Right.
Like it's an island that where they just keep all of their war planes so that they can kind of like bomb anywhere that, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But essentially they do this thing called Operation Christmas Drop, which is where they do humanitarian aid relief every single year, where they go around all of these outlying islands that have pretty much nothing and they drop like generators and all this sort of stuff at Christmas time to bring Christmas to people. And I mean, genuinely, I'm sure that it's actually a wonderful thing and it started with really good intentions to do this Christmas drop. It's just strikes me as very... Ugh.
Now's the time to do a pro-American
Christmas
movie.
A pro-American military Christmas movie, yeah. So essentially, at the beginning of the movie, you've got this like young woman who is working in a congressman's office, and the idea is that the congresswoman represents a district that has an airbase in the district in America. And basically, the budget cuts are coming, and she's in charge of cutting... a couple of air bases.
This is so boring.
Yeah, yeah.
This
is so boring.
Boring.
So, yeah. And essentially, her air base is up for cutting, and she basically knows that heaps of jobs will be lost in her district, and she'd probably lose re-election. So she has to try and find another air base that is less efficient than her, than the one in her district. And so she sets her young staffer, who's like the main protagonist of the film, to go to this island, because they've heard about this Operation Christmas Drop, and they're like, hey, what is the US military using taxpayer money do charitable good stuff for people who aren't even Americans?
Yeah.
And so she goes there to find...
One day they'll be American.
They won't be able to vote, though. And so she goes to the island. She meets this very, like, blandly handsome man who is in charge of basically...
He was like someone tried to draw Josh Hutcherson from memory.
Oh, but like stretched him so he was taller.
I've got a fun one. He looks like a Build-A-Bear workshop, but for hot leads.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. And so he's like... unbelievably kind and, you know, just oozing charitable goodwill. And he's also super hot and like has no personality other than I like bringing Christmas to people, and has a good answer for everything that this young woman is asking him for. Everything is donated. And like, essentially she's trying to catch him out. He's trying to hide. Why is he trying to hide what they're doing when actually it's totally above board?
Because he was taking a photo of him wearing a Santa hat, which is unmilitary.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
No, but like when she arrives on the island, he's constantly lying to her to be like, oh no, don't go down to that beach.
I don't know.
Like they're just doing military exercises, and actually these military people are setting up a party to raise money.
That's
like,
all
fundraising
they do,
thing.
Jeremy. That's all the military actually do, is just set up fun parties for... on tropical islands.
So that's why you should join.
Yeah. The thing I love most about Operation Christmas Drop, and that's what it's called in real life. The real life story it's based on is called Operation
Christmas
Drop.
There's so little imagination in this movie.
But the best thing is that calling it Operation Christmas Drop is a reference to other things that America drops. Like it's acknowledging other drops. It feels like you don't want to do that when you're doing a Christmassy, you know, good faith thing. But
well, I figured it's just 100% a reference to Operation Dumbo Drop, the 1995 film starring Danny Glover and Ray Liotta.
Did they drop elephants
yes.
on
yeah.
underprivileged countries?
Along those lines, yeah.
They dropped elephants, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Now we're just dropping radiators.
Maybe just
like
a single
Looney
elephant.
Cartoon.
The thing about this movie, it took me four goes to get all the way through.
It took
because
me a couple.
It took me
I
three.
I kept on going, surely we are getting towards the end. And I realized we weren't even past the first third. Because the thing is that as soon, like, they set the movie up and you know exactly what is going to happen.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, I watched the first 2 minutes of the movie and I was just like, okay, cool. Pause. I can tell you exactly how this is going to go. And then the next hour and a half was just interminably long of like just essentially everyone. It's like when you go to a children's like play and there's no plot, but it's stretched out over an hour and you're just like, get the children to finish the play.
Yeah.
Like, I know what's going to happen. Please make it stop. And that is what this movie was like.
Is it Guyana that it's set in?
I don't know.
Somewhere like that. Someone from there did a think piece on it this past week.
Oh, really?
And they among talking about how this is American propaganda,
yeah.
They also said that the greeting they say in the film, which is, I thought they were saying, have a day.
Yeah.
I think it's in the native language and they pronounce it wrong in the movie.
Oh, great.
Like, nonstop.
Well, because why wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of
interesting. It's white saviorism, like,
oh,
to
yeah.
the max.
But then it's also based on a true story, so it's very, like, I don't know. But I mean, I guess so.
That's how
like
they get away with it.
Yeah, I
right?
guess something like Hidden Figures is as well, and Green Book, and those are very white savior kind of stories.
But the idea, the thing behind this is like, I just, when she goes, when he like takes her on that helicopter trip to the island, and she goes there and like sees these like poor brown children and like is overwhelmed by like how much they need, and she like empties her purse, she empties the contents of her purse, and she's like, here, you can use my makeup. And like, I was like, why do these girls want your makeup? Like, yeah, just no. Like, and then she's just like, here, take my leather purse. Like, you know, I just, and she's just like,
it's just littering, it's just littering on a beach.
And then she's like, oh, I just feel like I've done something good. Like, it's all about how it makes her feel.
Yeah.
About, you know, like, yeah, oh, now I feel like I've done something good. It's just it strikes the wrong tone the way through. And you just don't feel Christmassy at all about anything.
Yeah, the romance plot through it is just like, is very, very generic. It's the woman who's all business, who just needs to meet a laid-back, chilled island dude, and then she learns to stop. And then at the end of the film, her boss shows up and is like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, but hey, wait a minute, I think this Operation Christmas Drop is a pretty good idea. And then everyone cheers.
And somehow she manages to get his family onto the island for free.
It's Christmas, dude.
And like,
yeah, it's a Christmas miracle, Jeremy. God, have a little
faith.
And she's
like, oh, I called in a favor because a friend of mine is a reporter who was coming over to the island to do the story. I'm like, no, the media has no money. They're not paying for a journalist to fly to the... Oh, just, yeah.
All right, so what do you guys think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I didn't even think of that.
Is it on Rotten Tomatoes? It shouldn't be.
Let's go 44.
Oh no, 32.
You're quite 32. AJ. You're quite close. It's 50.
Ah, damn it! What?
Yeah.
And do you know what? It's actually not the lowest one we're talking about today.
But American critics.
So, I think that this is a film. It'll have 50. If something has 50, what that's communicating to you as like someone reading data is that it's not that it's bad. It's that it's divisive. That's what 50% often means, right? Because it means 50% of critics rated it highly, 50% didn't. So I reckon there are enough critics in the world that were seduced by the perceived sweetness of the story and was like, it's a good, fun Christmas movie.
Well,
about
it's a true story, didn't you know?
It's not a true story. Well, it's based on a true operation, and there's a guy in it that happens to be a real guy.
And that was
the
nice
main
that
characters
he was in
aren't.
It. That was nice that he was in it.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we move on to the next one?
Please.
So, the second worst film we're talking about.
Oh.
This is I think, where it's going to get interesting, because I feel like we might all have different answers.
Yeah, hold on. What are the movies that are left? We've got Princess Switch 2.
Holidate, Jingle Jangle, and Alien Xmas.
Oh, I've got three that it could be.
Okay. Let's, on the count of three, let's say the second worst one, we think. Okay.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Jingle Jangle.
Switched again.
Hey! we're the same. What did you say, Jeremy?
I said Jingle Jangle.
And Richard said, yeah, I agree. It's Princess Switch 2, Switched Again.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about that movie.
Okay, so Princess Switch Switched Again is a sequel to The Princess Switch, which is apparently, and then last year there was The Night Before Christmas as well. It's this series of movies that Netflix is inevitably is somehow doing, starring Vanessa Hudgens in kind of these fantastical scenarios. So where did we last leave our heroes in The Princess Switch? Our kind of
for what seems like it would be such a simple plot, I actually can't remember what the Princess Switch 1 was really about.
Okay,
like,
so the Princess Switch 1 started out, there was kind of sexual tension between, let's say, American Vanessa Hudgens and the Baker Boy.
Stacy? Right?
They were exes.
Stacy and Baker Boy.
Yeah,
no,
Stacy and Baker
Boy. Let's not get too complicated. It's American Vanessa Hudgens.
Okay.
Yeah,
American Vanessa Hudgens.
So American Vanessa, and they were exes, and nothing's ever going to happen with them again. But they're really good friends, and they were going to, what's the name of the country?
Moldova.
Let's say Moldova.
It's not Moldova.
It's not, because Moldova is a real country.
And Aldovia is the one from...
Montanaro. No, that's where she's from.
No, well, that's where she goes.
It's Belgravia.
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 So, I didn't realize that was a fictional place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Belgravia is actually a suburb in London. But anyway, more on that later. So anyway, so there's a world baking competition in Belgravia. So the two of them decide to go over. She discovers that the Duchess of Montanaro, who is, we're just going to say, Montanaran Vanessa Hudgens, They run.
She's English. She's got an English accent.
Yeah, English Vanessa Hudgens. Thank you. So she is about to marry the Prince of Belgravia, who is good-looking Sam Palladio from Nashville. anyway, so they're meant to get married. English Vanessa Hudgens and him, and then English Vanessa Hudgens is judging the baking competition. The two Vanessa Hudgens bump into each other, and English Vanessa Hudgens starts talking to her about how she's like, oh, you know, I don't really like this, and I just want to experience what freedom's like for a bit, mm-hmm. and I don't want to have to deal with this. And so she's like, well, why don't we switch places? And so they do, and then
a princess and the pauper,
American Vanessa Hudgens falls in love with Sam Palladio, the prince, and ends up marrying him at the end. And English Vanessa Hudgens is like, oh, that's so great, and she ends up kind of falling in love with Baker Boy.
I think we can stop there.
That's where it all ends. Okay, and then, yes. So that's where we've left. And then basically in the interim period we find out that English Vanessa Hudgens and Baker Boy have broken up because she's about to become the queen of Montanaro, and he kind of just can't deal with that, doesn't want that queen life.
This is all told to you in a previously on section with American Vanessa Hudgens going, you might remember me.
Oh, you probably remember.
Like, oh, baby V, sorry, I don't remember you.
Well, and also, it's the worst thing ever because it's exactly the same way that the Christmas Prince movie started.
Right.
She's basically blogging to her blog audience, being like, you may remember that. And it's just like, how are you just going to start this movie exactly the same way, talking to some weird blog audience, but there's not even a blog?
Yeah. So this one is essentially they visiting each other again, and the British one doesn't want to become the queen, and the...
No, she doesn't not want to become the queen.
No, she doesn't not want to become... They're trying to set her back up with her ex, which is a very inappropriate thing to do, I think, when you don't have enough information about what...
Prince and Princess, so American Vanessa Hudgens is now the Princess of Belgravia.
They're both royalty now,
King and Queen, actually, because he's become the King of Belgravia. They are visiting because because Montanaro woman is about to become the Queen of Montanaro, so they're there for the coronation.
God.
They decide to bring over Baker Boy because American Vanessa Hudgens is like, you guys need to make it happen again,
which is not her call,
is not her call at all. And also his daughter is basically convincing him that he needs to get back together with this, which is super on the verge between precocious and just being a little asshole.
If I was Baker Boy in these movies, I'd be like, this is actually none of your fucking business. Like, we have our reasons and you guys actually don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, the thing about this one is there's a third Vanessa Hudgens. British. Even more British Vanessa Hudgens.
Like slaggy British. Slaggy British Vanessa Hudgens.
Who's the cousin of normal British Vanessa Hudgens.
Because you know how cousins always look exactly the same.
Yeah, they're identical cousins.
To be honest, my brother and my cousin look like they could be twins.
Don't ruin it. Okay, fine.
I'm sorry. Anyway, like, it sounds like I'm criticizing the movie for having such a lazy plot trope. It's the only thing I want to see out of a sequel to The Princess.
100%. Oh, we talked about
it. Third Vanessa Hudgens. And so she's like the villain, and there's a three-way accidental switch that happens where everyone's playing each other. I'm actually not going to go into details. I actually refuse to. I actually refuse to go into the specifics of what happens. But what I will say is this. The evil Vanessa Hudgens was the best part of the movie.
Yeah, 100%. No, actually, no. I agree. Oh. She's the best Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah, I do have a best part of the film. Which I'm infuriated by, what's his face? Jeremy at.
yes, I ruined the
what's
movie for Richard.
What's his face? We're forgetting everyone's fucking
name. There
names.
Is, like, at the wedding at the end, we do see the chick and the guy from A Christmas Prince, a movie I have not seen. I've seen its two sequels. They're at the wedding. And I was like, I thought I'm not even going to recognize them if they show up. But Jeremy was like, oh, you know, told us essentially that they're in there. Mm.
I told you that they appear in the movie at some point.
And it was like, literally, I slaved through this fucking movie. And then at the end, it was like this one thing that would have been like, just you know, the light bulb of recognition going off, not even like excitement in any way, but just feeling something. And Jeremy fucking stole that from me.
The light bulb of recognition. So this whole movie, it's just an orange out of order sign in your plan.
Like, Richard, what I'm hearing from you is that you are feeling something. So yeah. If the goal was to feel something, I delivered that to you.
What would you prefer, Richard? Boredom or anger? It's up to you, dude.
Well, no, I could have felt excitement, but Jeremy stole it from me.
All right, I want to talk about evil Vanessa Hudgens, because she talks like this, darling, and she's got these two cronies who I thought were pretty funny as well. And at the movie, it's like we've talked to. I'm pretty sure on previous discussions of Vanessa Hudgens' Christmas movies, we've lamented that, like, what a not that great actress to give a Christmas contract to.
Yeah.
And like, especially the Christmas Switch, Princess Switch, where she's playing two different characters.
Yeah.
What a gamble. This is what it's for, man. It's like she's playing a Disney villain. I know it's not literally a Disney villain, but she's playing Scar. She's female.
She was pretty much when Ursula the Sea Witch turns into a woman.
Yeah.
That's who she was playing.
And I think she likes to play that character more.
Yeah.
Than audience surrogate normal American Vanessa Hudgens.
100%. And almost, as I was watching it, I was like, there's a part of me that wonders if Vanessa Hudgens was like, if you're going to get me back to do another bloody Princess Switch movie, you have to give me something more fun to play. Mm. Because every time she was playing that version of herself, you could tell she was just having a ball of time.
Yeah. I thought that was a lot of fun. And if anything, it fell away when she switched and had to pretend she was a different Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah.
Which, as you know, and not that amazing of an actress as Vanessa Hudgens is, she does a good job of playing a British character playing an American character and a British character playing another British character. I can distinguish all three characters and the three characters
playing each other.
Playing each other.
Yeah.
I do hope that if we continue to get Princess Switch movies, I would like the amount of Vanessa Hudgens to multiply exponentially so that we can have more than four next time. Give me 10 Vanessa Hudgens in the next one.
Good news is that we are getting another Princess Switch sequel next year.
Imagine if it's called, so this one was called The Princess Switch Switched Again. Imagine if the next one's called The Princess Switch Switched Again with an exclamation mark.
No, I wanted to be Switcheroo.
Oh.
Princess Switcheroo.
What, nice, the next one only has one Vanessa Hudgens in it?
Wow, that's subversion.
Oh, yeah, prequel. Like the other two died.
Yeah, which one died? You don't find. Do you know there's a new Ninja Turtles comic where there's only one of them, and it's black and white, and it doesn't tell you which Ninja Turtle survived.
So it's no longer the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's just Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
But don't they have different weapons and shit, and look slightly different?
Yeah, apparently it tells you at the end of the first issue, but the whole promotional. Journey.
I don't know how we got onto TMNT, but
it's just imagine if they were like
clear,
three,
it's pretty
two
clear
of the three
how we did, Jeremy, is that it was talking about the other characters dying and then one being left, which obviously turned on the light bulb of recognition in AJ's head.
Oh my god, I can talk about this. So Princess Switch 3, they're all dead except one.
And the little girl killed them.
The little girl killed them, and you don't find out, like, the promotional tour is like, which one's still alive?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about with this movie. The first one is the thing I enjoyed the most about the movie was the production value.
Okay.
Like, it was beautiful. And after watching A Christmas Prince 3 last year, which had... It was like $10 was spent on that movie. And I was like, genuinely...
It's a $10 movie.
Genuinely, I felt so bad for...
Rose McGowan.
Rose McIver.
McIver.
I felt so bad for Rose McIver, wonderful Kiwi person, Rose McIver. You know, Netflix did her dirty, man, because it's like she does, you know, multiple... And essentially, Christmas Prince is kind of like the road test of the Netflix concept.
Did you just not like her
concept,
hair or
right?
something like that? I remember that being a big complaint you had.
No, exactly. Like, the people who did her hair, they did a terrible job last year. Anyway, no, but like, even there were no people in the castle. There were no, like, all the decorations were super tacky. Like, they just had no locations. In this movie, there are sumptuous sets. Like, it is just like... oozing with money and production value. And it's just, it actually felt like you were in a royal palace at Christmas time. And I was like, this is cool. And so you guys were kind of, I guess, shitting on this movie a little bit, but I just enjoyed being in the world a bit. And it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Like,
don't get me wrong.
The Vanessa Hudgens verse is a... it's the one I'm excited for every year now. They're terrible, and I do not enjoy watching them. But they're the ones that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what she's up to.
Well, the really scary thing about this is that last year we got Vanessa Hudgens in The Night Before Christmas, and in The Night Before Christmas, at the end, there was an intimation that the Night Before Christmas universe is joined to a Christmas Prince universe.
They mention Aldovia.
Yeah, they mention Aldovia, which means that Vanessa Hudgens exists as her character in Night Before Christmas.
That's the next film.
Yeah, that's the fourth.
Holy
shit!
That's the fourth
Vanessa Hudgens. Vanessa Hudgens. Apparently, is it that in one of them, in the Christmas Prince... Wait, the Princess Switch. It's not even the same words. In the Princess Switch, they're watching A Christmas Prince on Netflix, right?
Yeah, there's
which
something like that.
Implies and like, that's actually a documentary in the Christmas
no. Switch. You know. It was Night Before Christmas they were watching.
No. Okay, I'll lay out the timeline. In the Princess Switch 1, they are watching The Christmas Prince on Netflix.
Yeah.
And The Night Before Christmas, they mention Aldovia.
Oh, and they watched Holiday in the Wild.
Did they?
Yeah, they watched Holiday in the Wild. And also, so this really confused me because the girl from Operation Christmas Drop, she was also the lead in Holiday Calendar, which was a few years ago.
Yeah, so I was
looking at her, and then I realized that she had a credit in IMDb. She had a credit for Night Before Christmas. And I was like, holy crap, she's in both movies. Like, and then I realized that she's just got a credit because they watch Holiday Calendar in that movie. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, that's less exciting.
Okay, and then in The Princess Switch 2, they see the prince and the queen and king of Aldovia from The Christmas Prince, which either means that when she was watching The Christmas Prince in the first film, that it was a documentary, or it means that the prince and princess weren't at her coronation, but it was actually Rose McIver and the guy that plays the prince were at the coronation.
And they just got together from the filming and loved their costumes so much.
Yeah, exactly.
very cool. So that's that film.
Jeremy's got one more thing.
Of course he does.
So the thing that just keeps going in these Netflix movies is the idea that royalty are deeply involved in the democratic processes of their countries.
Fuck that, man.
Like in the Christmas Prince 3, at the beginning, like he's like passing this law to get rid of poverty in his country, like in front of the parliament. And I'm like, wait a minute, separation of like monarch and representative people. And then at the beginning of this, Sam Palladio's character's just like, oh yeah, I was just at parliament. And I'm like, you're not an elected representative. You don't get to be in parliament, dude.
It's two Christmas movies in a row we've talked about that I like fundamentally, ideologically disagree with.
it's like the fabric of your democracy is falling apart.
All right. And what do we think this has on Rotten Tomatoes as well, just before we move on?
Definitely more than 50. I'm going to say 60. No, 57.
I'm going to go 66.
Oh, 67.
Man, I'm not doing well.
I'm doing all right.
I mean, I get to do this once a year, so I'm no wonder I'm out of practice.
All right, now let's move on to the next worst one, and I could tell we're going to disagree here. A count of three. One, two, three.
Alien
Jingle Jangle. Okay, cool. We had a genuine crossroads here. Very fun. All right, what one do you guys, what should we talk about?
Should we talk about Jingle Jangle?
I'm happy to talk about
because I've already nominated Jingle Jangle as
right. That's actually lower for you.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, genuinely, like three of them are around the same. So I don't
know. Yeah, no, there's less of a hierarchy this year.
Yeah,
okay.
I think.
All right.
Jingle Jangle is a it could best be described as Hamilton meets Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium
meets The Greatest Showman
meets Small Soldiers. meets Welcome to Marwen.
Oh my God.
Right? Welcome to Marwen's in there as well. It looks like a fucked up pancake of a bunch of different movies that have come out in the last 3 or 4 years.
All of them far more successful.
And now it's Christmassy as well.
So it's a musical. It's about an inventor whose apprentice runs away with his greatest creation and his book of secrets, and then essentially surpasses his business. And then we skip forward years later, and the
inventor, Forrest Whitaker,
is now, you know, poor, down as like, and he's got to invent one thing before Christmas, or he's going to be cast out of his shop and all his possessions
by
sold.
Hugh Bonneville in like one of the most thankless cameo roles ever.
And then, yeah, so meanwhile, so the Forrest Whitaker plays
Geronicus Jangle,
the main character, and then the apprentice, now all grown up, is Keegan-Michael Key. And then his, Forrest Whitaker's Geronimus Jangle, his granddaughter comes to visit, and she sort of reignites his love for creating things. And you know what? I fucking loved this film. It's the second best film we've cut on this entire series.
No, listen to me. I knew you were going to do this. I can tolerate it maybe being the best Christmas Netflixmas movie of 2020.
Yeah.
But Richard, it's not a good movie.
I thought it was quite good. I enjoyed it more than The Christmas Chronicles, which would currently be second to Klaus.
I thought this was real boring.
I'm on record as not liking The Christmas Chronicles, and The Christmas Chronicles is way better than this movie.
This film was fucking great. I thought the music was great. I loved the storyline.
Trolling us?
Honestly, I love this. And you know what? Guess what it has on Rotten Tomatoes? 93% certified fresh.
What?
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, this film fucking rocked. It was great.
I thought it was boring. I thought it was unmotivated. Lots of weird stuff happened.
It didn't need to be a musical.
That was beautiful.
None of the songs actually moved the story forward more than just a scene with a small amount of dialogue would have.
Yeah, catchy though. Man, liked them. Liked all the songs.
And tell you what, listeners.
Sing me one of them right now.
The G-Man. Can't spell
magic.
Yeah,
sing it to me.
I don't want to sing, Jeremy.
Well, if you can't sing it, that tells me it's not very catchy.
I'm not saying I can't sing it, Jeremy.
I think that...
I'm refusing to sing it.
At the start, he reveals his greatest invention is a Don Juan puppet played by Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
And he then says, I'm going to make millions of these, and every child will want one. Now, first of all, let's ignore the implications that every child wants a Don Juan doll, who's like, as far as I know, like a sex pest or something. That's what he's famous for being. But also, the doll himself responds to this being like, oh, but I'm one of a kind. I am one of a kind.
I'm the only one.
And is turned evil out of a defense.
Like, and also turned evil in like a second.
Yeah, because
like, he had bad character.
Because he doesn't want to be cloned and not be unique anymore. And that's, the movie doesn't acknowledge that in the way I'm acknowledging.
Yeah,
the movie goes, he's the bad guy.
And also that he's supposed to, that Geronicus Jangle is supposed to be this amazing inventor, and his greatest idea ever turns out to be an awful idea.
It's slave labor.
Well, but also slave labor, but also like a fully... It's basically AI, right? Yeah. It's AI that could literally take over the world. You know,
I
like
would say that the Don Juan doll is not the... like, he's not just like, yeah, I'm evil now. He acts as the devil on the shoulder to Gustafsson, or whatever his name is.
Gustafsson.
Who should have left. He was underappreciated.
Yeah, but he was about to give him the present.
I got you this present, and I was about to give you this present before you left and turned evil. It's like, that's not his fault. You should have given him the present.
Well, he shouldn't have turned evil. People shouldn't turn evil. But
I disagree.
I disagree, and I'll tell you right now, I'm about to turn evil.
I didn't think it was like, oh, this is evil. It's like he saw a chance to manipulate his way out of a situation. And he took
by
it.
By stealing IP that didn't belong to him.
No, I mean the Don Juan doll.
Well, he was just defending himself, man. What was he to do? And I'm saying the movie doesn't acknowledge that. The movie, the resolve to the Ricky Martin doll is that in the end, Geronicus Jangle gets him and just switches him off. And he's like, well, there you go.
No, he reprograms him.
Well, he doesn't need to be reprogrammed. That's deeply troubling. But, the solution is
to
be reprogrammed.
Also, the idea of reprogramming something that exists in a time where there is no computer chips, there's only like cogs and wheels. Like, where is the processing the power program? Coming from?
Did you guys not learn fucking anything from Jingle Jangle? It's about the power of belief. There's a magical robot.
Oh my god, that was
powered
that
by
was
belief.
The worst. That was the.
That was great. He was a great character.
Effing worse. When Buddy's just like, I only turn on when people believe in me.
Yeah, look, that's great. It taught us all something about ourselves.
I actually agree with Richard. I can get behind. If we're going cheesy Christmas schlock, it's like, fine, let's do it. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I love the set design of the Princess Switch 2, but no, a robot powered by belief is too much for me. Listen to how you sound, Jeremy.
Genuinely enjoying good production values, I think is...
Okay, but this did have good production values.
This did have really good production values. So there is a lot to praise about this movie.
Yeah,
I'm just
like
saying
the entire thing.
What's
great.
What's wrong with it really just stinks. So like all of the choreography, the cinematography of the choreography and like all the musical numbers, like the actual production of the musical numbers is incredible. Yeah. Like all the dancing, amazing. All the talent involved, so good. The voices, and normally I am the first person to be like, oh man, they never hire people who can actually sing to do musicals. Oh my goodness, the voices just to listen to.
Yeah, because his grown up daughter, who doesn't show up until the end, is the voice of Tiana in Princess and the Frog.
Oh, nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's amazing. And I was just like, give her more songs. She's so good.
That's the best scene in the movie, is that make it work scene where her and her father kind of reconnect.
I just wish there was more lyrics to that song rather than just make it work repeated 50,000 freaking times. It was just like, John Legend wrote this song. Could you not have given us some more lyrics?
Look, I actually went to boister up my own opinion here. Is that a word?
Bolster.
I actually went into this expecting it to be my favorite one.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, a Hamilton knockoff, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Hamilton's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. A knockoff is probably still pretty good. And I just, oh my God, I couldn't handle it after a little while. And I was just wanting it to end. I thought that it's one of those movies where the narrative device is an old lady telling her grandkids the story. And then at the end, it's revealed that the old lady was the character in the story.
It's been like, 84 years.
I'm like, I get it. Oh my God.
I thought that was such a great twist. My jaw dropped.
Fuck you. It was not a twist. It was very easy to see coming and very trite and very
I thought it was adorable. Derivative. I liked it as an ending.
Oh my gosh. So something that would have made this movie probably 40% better straight off the bat is if they acknowledged that the protagonist of this film is Journey, the granddaughter, because that starts with the backstory of young inventor Jeronicus Jangle, and his first song is just like, life is so great right now. Like, everything is great. Now, musically, in the structure of a musical, almost every musical needs to start with what's called an I want song, sure, which is basically where your protagonist sits down or like dances around and basically says, here's the world and this is what I want.
Alexander,
like,
I
need this thing. And so the thing is that it takes us around about 15 to 20 minutes to get to the I want song, which is Journey. And she basically sings the song that says, I want to be somewhere where my abilities and my desire to do cool stuff is taken seriously.
She wants to be part of your world.
Exactly. And so all
she wants to be where the people are.
Yes, thank you. So all of everything that happened up until that point absolutely should have been taken care of by like the device with the animatronic, like the sort of animated things. Like all the backstory of young Jeronicus Jangle should have been taken care of in that sort of device to get us to the point where the movie starts with the young girl singing that I want song. And that would have made the movie 40% better straight away.
40%.
Yeah.
All right. That would put it at 130% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, I could go 35% better, but 40, Jesus, Jeremy.
All right. What's the next? Are we done? We keep talking about Jingle Jangle?
Well, I just want to get a final. Like, I genuinely quite liked Jingle Jangle. And don't let these two sour pusses, stop you from checking it out.
Yeah, check it out and realize how wrong Richard is. Just know for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Check out how wrong 93% of critics are.
Yeah, I Apple. Always believe critics.
I actually do genuinely.
Jeremy trying to age. Oh, God.
All right. The next, I guess this is arbitrary now, isn't it? Well, there's two films left.
Yeah, Holiday and Alien Xmas.
Which one should we talk about?
Well, with the worst one. Okay. Three.
Let's talk about Alien Xmas because I don't want to finish on a short film.
Okay, fine.
I guess Holiday is the next worst one, but it's also the one targeted at my demographic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, yeah. It is the young adult demographic.
Yeah, it's the millennial. It's the millennial. Like, you know, it's people turning 30.
Yeah. Yeah. So it stars Emma Roberts and an Australian man,
Luke Bracey.
Yeah.
Luke Bracey and
Luca
Brasi. Less a Christmas. It's less a Christmas movie, apart from the fact that it starts and ends at Christmas. But it's about these few to be friends with benefits meet up and decide to be each other's holodate, which is every holidays they will be each other's date to as a way of like negating people's questions.
Kind of being a social lubricant at parties where they have to go. And if they turn up alone, people are going to feel sorry for them or ask them too many questions.
Yep. And this was an interesting movie because it started out and I kind of had a gauge for what rating it was, I guess. Like what I would imagine its rating was. I had a gauge for what I was going to expect. And very early in the scene, there's a scene where the main guy, a woman, goes down on him, as the kids say. Which, it was filmed vague enough that it's like, they're engaging sexually. We don't need to be specific. You could probably get away with that in an M-rated movie at a stretch, right? And then 2 minutes later, when they break up, she says, "You didn't care about that when I had your cum in my mouth." And I was like, wow, you said cum way too late in this movie. It's like maybe 15, 20 minutes in. It's like, we needed to know up top that. Like, that's what's so good about American Pie, right? Is they go, it's about blowjobs. We can talk about blowjobs in this movie.
And like, so, up until this point, it was just a nice romantic comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this film doesn't need to be R-rated. Like, you could do a perfectly serviceable
the demographic thing.
Rom-com without them swearing so much and being so explicit. It feels like I guess it does in one sense, like, make it more kind of natural to the way that people actually speak. But at the same time, I guess then that's part of the thing with the putting on Netflix. But I imagine if this was, like, actually made by a major film studio and got, like, a wide distribution in cinemas, they would have toned down the script.
You're totally right, and that's such an interesting observation that it's like, it's Netflix as a streaming service, as a platform that allows for this movie to be as raunchy as it is. And that, all that being said, it's actually not that raunchy. There's no nudity from memory, and there's no like, you know, there's sex, but there's not sex scenes.
Mm, yeah.
I thought this was a bad movie, but there's another universe where I could have liked it.
Well, it's a serviceable movie.
It's like 100%.
Yeah, it's fine. It is actually the worst rated of the films we're talking about today.
Really?
Yeah, because it's crass. I reckon that's why. It's because it gets put in a box.
Yeah, it's at 45% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
One thing that I thought was a massive problem with the narrative and like a decision they made that was like, you don't understand what the story you're actually telling is that it's one of the holidays, which, by the way, I don't know if you need a date for every holiday. Is that a thing?
Yeah, for like St. Patrick's Day.
I thought it was a fun setup, and it was like, while it's maybe not necessarily set, but they kind of do it in the movie so that it's like their
it's
first
a
couple
formula.
Ones are like in chance encounters, and then by the time they get to, like, you know, the kind of more minor ones, it's like, oh, I need a date for Easter. It's more like, I'm starting to kind of like this guy, you know. Yeah. I thought that was like, it's a cool framing device.
Yeah, no, that's not my problem with it. My problem with it was that I think it was on Easter, and the mum tries to set Emma Roberts up with their hot doctor neighbor, and it becomes clear to the audience and clear to us, and it's not even a twist. You're just supposed to assume this already, that they actually know the holodate setup. And I was like, what? Surely the whole point is that you keep it a secret.
Yeah.
And that they think you're dating.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's nothing. Otherwise, it's literally...
You're still getting the same questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, that is a fundamental misunderstanding of, like, what this gimmick is. Like, it should be... They should be lying to
people. But can you imagine the writer's room in this one, though? Because they needed to introduce the doctor. So
that's why.
Right? They needed, and so they were like, oh, but why would the mother trying to be introducing... But the thing is, that could be easily taken away. Like, the mother could just not like the Australian guy. And she didn't need to know that it was just a fake holiday thing.
Why would you tell anyone
that? Oh, that, yeah. I didn't actually pick that up. But
it's so weird. It'd be like if, like, liar, liar, he wasn't a compulsive liar to begin with.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's like taking the entire, like, reason for the scenario they're in out of it.
Yeah.
I saw this movie 2 weeks ago and do not remember much else about it.
I do remember that like there's a weird mix of the leads have really good chemistry, but also neither of them are very strong actors. And so there's a lot of awkward scenes where, because, you know, acting is reacting. There's a lot of waiting to say your line. Kind of thing. And that's so it's Netflix, like while they are a reasonably cute couple, and when they're able to like bounce off each other very quick, but when they're actually like telling each other things, they're not listening. They're waiting for the alarm.
Interesting. Yeah,
that's really, yeah. And what you said about chemistry, I completely agree, because I was quite charmed by this movie.
Well, I think actually probably what it is that would have been shot out of sequence, and so scenes where they actually had got the actors had gone to know each other and developed chemistry are sprinkled throughout the film rather than being the characters gaining chemistry.
Here's why we all feel weird about our feelings towards this movie, right? It's because every other Netflixmas movie doesn't get you. This movie gets you, it's just bad also.
Well, it doesn't get me.
Well, it gets you. It's like we can swear.
I would say that Jingle Jangle got me.
But Jingle Jangle is still
so represents your life story.
Holiday is down to earth, and that's why we like it, because we receive it. We're receptive.
And that
to it.
The thing is that the where Holiday lost me and what made me go, okay, fine, is the ending in the mall where she doesn't just run after him and just grab him.
Oh, yeah.
She has to get up on stage and do the whole like romantic comedy trope of embarrassing herself and like, you know, declaration of love in front of a huge group of people, which fundamentally betrays who each of them are as characters. Like, neither of them would want
It's like something that Trainwreck does, where the whole thing is like being a subversive rom-com and then having the most generic rom-com ending. Crazy Stupid Love does it as well. But I fucking love Crazy Stupid Love.
Does it?
Yes, that is a great
When he does the speech at the assembly.
I don't remember Crazy Stupid Love's ending.
Yeah. But, so, Holiday, it's... I just enjoyed it because I actually just, when you say we're going to do, you know, we're going to be each other's date for all the holidays of the year, you kind of go, I get what's going to happen. And and rather than Operation Christmas Drop, you've got these marker points of like, now we're going to have the set piece of Easter. Now we're going to have the set piece of this. So you've got these things where things are going, these moments where things are going to happen and they're identifiable moments, and you can kind of feel how far you are through the film as well, which is good. Mm. Like, I really enjoyed that. And they managed, I think, to get the beats of a relationship through the year nicely. And also, Christian Chenoweth was amazing. I absolutely love Christian Chenoweth, and she delivered hardcore.
She was pretty
in this
annoying
movie.
I thought
I think it's if Operation Christmas Drop is a person, it's the missionary kid from high school that I don't really want to talk to, right?
Because he has no chat whatsoever.
If Jingle Jangle's a person, it's the theater kid that I'm like, you do you, man.
Yeah,
I'm not into this, but you do you. And Princess Switch is like the girl your age, but she makes muffins and posts on Instagram and into cottagecore.
Cottagecore?
Yeah, you've never heard that? But you know immediately what I'm referring
to. Yes, absolutely.
So she
puts a Live, Laugh, Love poster on her
precisely. Holidate is like a person who's exactly like me. I just don't like them. It's like, I relate to you.
Like,
I get
they're too
it.
Much like you.
Holiday's
really
like
the girl you kind of have a crush on, but they're like,
The more you find out about them,
she says the word
come
in front of you, and you're like, that's too much.
Like, it is that kind of thing where it's like, the more you get to know them, the more you're kind of like, actually, we probably, while you're, you know, I thought you are undeniably attractive, I don't think we'd be a good couple.
That's it.
Because one of us needs to care more.
Yeah. All right. Can we talk about Alien Xmas in under 7 minutes? That's the question.
Oh, my gosh.
Can we do it?
Guys. I mean, it's a very short movie, and there's not much to say about it, so yes.
Okay, I rated it the best one because it's so just whatever. It's like, I didn't like any of these movies.
It's
and
fine.
Alien Xmas was cute and fine. That's my take.
What's it about?
It's about an alien race called Klepts.
Yeah.
Oh, it's because it's kleptomania. Yeah. Oh my gosh! Guys, that was a talking point.
AJ, what the heck?
That was a talking point. I was like, what a weird word to make the name of your alien species.
Wow.
And they
love stealing. That's the whole thing.
They love stealing, and one of them goes to Earth to start an invasion.
Well, and they've lost their color. Over time, they've lost their color because they just go and take from all other countries in order to sustain themselves.
Worlds, not countries. So the shortest one, whose name is X, goes to Earth, and lo and behold, the place he goes to on Earth is Christmastown, a place that most humans don't believe exists, which I thought was an interesting dynamic that was not explored. But how would it be?
At the North Pole.
Yeah. So the alien meets like elves and Santa and not just regular humans. and, you know, its heart has changed and it stops the incoming invasion. Here's what I'll say. I appreciated the Rankin Bass homage that this movie was, the Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Reindeer. Do you only know what Rankin Bass is because you said on the Discord this morning that Rankin Bass isn't really a thing here, and I was able to put two and two together and be like, oh, Rankin Bass must be those claymation shorts we don't really
have.
Arbid's
Uncontrollable Christmas.
Yes, now I know exactly what you mean. They look wooden. They look like wooden pieces.
I appreciate all that, but my God, are we spoiled for animation these days, especially animation and chunks as well.
Yeah.
And like after Klaus, after Spider-Verse, it's like, I need something a little more engaging to be like, it's so amazing. If the story was better, maybe I would have liked it more.
I watched this on a plane, and when you're on a plane, you're a pressurized container and your senses, your like emotional vulnerability is heightened.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry, but I was like, it got me. And at the end, when all the aliens regain their color, I was like, this is very sweet. And so I wasn't like, and it's like, it is only 45 minutes. It's a perfect plane watch.
For the kinds of trips we're allowed to do now.
I just felt nice watching it. And I was like, this is all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it's not Jingle Jangle. Don't get me wrong. Good Jingle Jangle was fantastic.
I mean, this is just so not for me. That's the thing about this movie. This is like the Veggie Tales of Christmas movie.
I'm pretty sure the girl was played by Junior Asparagus from Veggie Tales.
Oh my god,
she sounded exactly like her.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I was like, this would be great to put on at a work Christmas party where everyone brings their kids and you need to put them all in a room and make them watch something for a while. This would work.
No,
and
you put on Klaus.
Well, we did that last year.
They're different demographics. If we can transition now to our overall conversation of Netflixmas, what we've seen year to year is a attempt to represent every demographic, age, race, gender, possible, certain races. but you know, there's 10 this year, who knows?
There's 10 races this year, Jeremy.
This 11 actually. So this is their first foray into younger than Klaus, right? This is their first preschool feature.
Yeah.
And I find that element of Netflixmas easily the most interesting element that each one is trying to cater to a different person.
I agree.
So that's my take.
I think like talking to people of like constantly through the last year about how Klaus is the greatest Christmas movie ever made. It actually fucking might be. It's only got a couple of things that would be in the running against it. But like, yeah, realizing that like saying something is the best Christmas movie ever made actually isn't that big of a statement kind of thing, because there aren't that many like the Hallmark like channel that in the States is like famous for, they have like 50-60 a year, and it's like, you know, from what I understand, they just fucking play these things all year round, generic white heterosexual couple kind of ones. And I do like
favorite
that,
Christmas movie
that we're getting like these different things. So even something like Holidate, it's like, yeah, cool, like an R-rated rom-com, like, yeah. I like that they're kind of saturating the market.
Christmas Princess Switch.
Yeah, and so like, even shit like A Christmas Prince, it's like, yeah, fuck it, it's not for me, but I'm glad there's more Christmas movies, you know?
The fact that princess and Christmas are slightly similar words is like the death of me. Hey, we should make a movie for Netflixmas next year called Hetero White Christmas. Is that a good idea? Anyway, hey, thank you for listening, everybody, to part one of Netflixmas 2020 for this year. I'm looking forward to the six films we got to watch next week, and I hope people are maybe watching along and enjoying them with us. I'm excited for Christmas Chronicles 2. I'm excited for Christmas Crosshairs. I think that sounds better than
Crossfire. And also, sorry, Christmas Crossfire.
I think that sounds better than the other ones.
And I'm excited for people to comment that they enjoyed Jingle Jangle.
Yeah,
let's see how that happens.
Dan from Hawaii, get in those comments.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, we'll see you later, everybody.
We'll see you next week for the Muppets.
Yeah,
Merry November.
it's November. Why are we doing this now? All right, and welcome, everybody, after a wonderful episode, to the post-credits sequence. This is a sequence where myself and Richard, we go to the Patreon, we ask all our Patreons who pay $5 or more if they would like to ask us a question for the post-credits sequence. It doesn't have to be a question, it can be a topic to talk about.
Yeah, it could just be a statement. They could just tell us to shut up for...
Yep.
For once,
I would love that.
we would still set up a record and
yeah. So today's post credit sequence comes to us from Vincent Lara.
Hello, Vincent.
He asks, "Hey, Vincent." He says, "Hey, guys. Just wondering, what was the first fandom you remember being a part of? Whether you just had a group of friends with the same interest, or join old fashioned chat rooms like." Like I think he said, like I did for Pokemon. This is actually a fresh question. Vincent asked this a day before we recorded this. So if that gives you any kind of clue of how close to the line we are of running out of post-credit sequences.
If you're listening to this and you haven't sent one in, please send it in.
Yeah, but you can only do it if you're $5 or more. Yeah. So the first fandom I was a part of, Richard, this dates back to when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
I was really into Thomas the Tank Engine.
Wow. Okay.
And I had a couple of the like die-cast toys that you could get. There were two types of toys they would sell. They'd sell the like real high-quality metal die-cast ones and then the real shitty wooden ones.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum at the time was like sort of like executive producing the collection that I was creating. And she was like, you're only getting the die-cast ones. You don't want to mix the two, you know, series together.
Yeah.
And so I had like Thomas and Percy and Gordon and Henry, I think.
Thomas and James.
Yeah, Thomas and Friends. And I have this one really cherished memory where I think my parents must have got a tax refund or something. And they took us, me and my brother, they took us out shopping. And my brother, they bought him an Action Man. And then from memory, they bought me like 15 Thomas toys all in one go. It was amazing. I remember we were just at Toy World. And I don't know why, I don't know how much they cost, but they were just ready to just buy me a whole bunch. And I remember like looking at all the ones that I'd asked for and they just said, yes, 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 each time. And then I was looking at one other one. I was like, this one's cool. And mum being like, do you want me to get you that one as well? And she did. And so I had a whole bunch of these toys. I don't know what happened to them. We must have sold them or something. They weren't in their original packages or anything, but my mum always hated video games as we grew up because as she saw it, as soon as the PlayStation came into the household, I stopped being interested in Thomas the Tank Engine. Right. Which my retort to that is like, well, I was probably going to stop being interested in Thomas the Tank Engine eventually. so, you know.
Yeah. My answer, as far as fandoms go, like in terms of like what you would kind of consider like a modern fandom, you know, like getting fully like you know, you have with like the Doctor Who's and the Supernaturals and
of course,
things like that. Yeah. I'd say like my kind of closest experience to that. There's a couple of things. One would, I've spoken about them before on the podcast, but like Yellow Card, the band, mm-hmm. and that like that would be, I would go on absolutepunk.net and I would like, there's yeah, all yeah. these forums of like every single B-side, every like cover they've performed live, there's like shitty, so like I had like literally every song that ever recorded on my like 80 gig iPod Classic, because I would like, you know, troll these message boards for everything like that, not any like side projects, things like that. But yeah. the other one, and I know this, I share this with you as well, is that is Lost. And that was like one of the big things, Lostpedia back in the day. It would be like every time a new episode would come out, Lostpedia would be updated with like what questions this episode asks and what ones it answers. Yeah, and so yeah. it's like things left unanswered by this episode. And they were the most fucking minuscule things. And I think like since then, if you go back on Lostpedia, they've culled a lot of it, but it would be a lot like, yeah, it would be the craziest things. Like ones that are just like,
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
They don't require an answer. It's just a character making a decision. And it'd be like, yeah, why yeah. did they make that decision? It's like, because it's motivated by the character. But it was so much fun to read those. And then,
oh man.
And I mean, like, I'm 100% satisfied with the ending of Lost, but the idea of like going through the, like Lostpedia, and essentially, because it was written in a way like, these are the questions that this episode leaves open that need to
owes us to answer.
Yeah, that needs to be answered before the finale. And so many of them are like, yeah, it's just how storytelling works. Like, you don't get an answer to everything. But yeah, Lost is definitely, and I miss that kind of thing as well. Like that Lost is the last TV show that, you know, I'll consume like that.
Yeah, there's a Lost culture to. Like, I knew it as the IGN message boards.
Yeah.
I started on Jack and Daxter IGN message boards, mm-hmm. And was very obsessive on there. And then, yeah, I graduated over to the Lost IGN message boards. I don't think I did any others, but like, oh my God. And during like the off seasons when no new content's out, and it's like, people are like, who would win in a fight between these two characters? And yeah. it's like, this is not interesting yeah. discourse.
Well, with now, like, how other than like a few key shows, like something like The Mandalorian, that like TV shows are bingeable now, and so there isn't that community of like getting information at the same time.
Yeah, and there are subreddits, but subreddits I don't like, because in the same way that I liked old message boards, because like I don't subscribe to the subreddits of shows that I watch because of spoilers. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of the Wild West out there. They try to market, but like if you're a couple of weeks behind and someone posts a meme that reveals a character died, it's like, well, I guess there goes that.
I usually mute them while there's a season actually airing.
Yeah, true. That's a good idea.
Because yeah, I mean, like it's cool to get updates and see trailers and announcements about new seasons upcoming. But yeah, like because often like I'm doing right now with Fargo, I haven't watched any of the new season because I'm waiting for it to all be out and then I can just watch the whole thing. But I've muted the Fargo TV subreddit.
Nice. Well, I hope that answered your question, Vincent. This is a very fun conversation, actually.
It is. Maybe we could do a full podcast on it.
Sometimes we do a post credit scene, and I'm like, this could be a full episode. I'm like,
this is better than the episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.